with Ed Bass was done on February 5th, 1991. I visited Ed in his office on the second floor of Bass's clothing store. Ed is pushing 80 years old, and you'd never guess it, as you'll notice on the his conversation on the tape. Also, his dress is, he's still very dapper in his dress. Toward the end of the tape, he is talking about his days of travel and going to the various wholesale markets to get his clothing. And he mentions something about riding on the train. And then after it clicks off, he mentioned that suits in those days were $35 with two pair of pants. And then Botany 500 introduced a suit which was $50. And he took the plunge, and it was a great success for him. But to go from $35 to $50 was quite an undertaking back in the middle 40s. Let's pick up the interview. Say, that's a great picture. I've never seen that. You took that?
Yeah. That's, snapped that off a boat one night when we were out on the river.
Now, Construction Ag was going then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, no. This all belongs to...
Verplank.
Yeah. Now, whether they were there, I can't... It's just a little vague to me now. Maybe, but no, I don't think... I think... Construction Ag has been out of there a long time.
How long has it been? 15, 10 years?
I don't know. I would think so.
These are all pictures you've taken?
Yeah. This is
great.
Cumberland Crawl.
Oh. Yeah.
In the fall of the year. This I snapped out of the... I had Margaret down to the beach one night last spring, before she went to Seville, and we watched a beautiful sunset that night, and as we were leaving the oval, the lights went on. So I just stopped the car, and...
That looks almost painted, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, you see those are two lights.
Yes, right, exactly.
And,
yeah.
But it's...
twin lights, you can see them separated out here.
Yeah.
This is a beauty.
A pretty color. You did a good job of getting the color.
That's down at the Campbell Point.
Yeah, I got those in early October. I went to one of Hadley's, the final tennis tournament down at Holland.
Oh, yeah.
And it was on a Saturday morning, and it was foggy. And this was Port Sheldon.
Yeah, I see.
And
okay.
I stopped, and the sun is coming up there. See, it's up
uh-huh.
here, but you can see
the reflection.
And so I just stopped the car and took that, and I turned around, and you wouldn't believe that's the same day at the same time.
Huh.
Yeah, that's when I looked looking into the sun, and this is with the sun on the building over there.
That is gorgeous.
Yeah.
That looks like something out of the swamps of southern Georgia.
Yeah.
Doesn't it, though?
Like the Okefenokee or something.
When you say you just snapped that, that's pretty good composition. You like to get leaves in the
front. Yeah, I go for composition.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. That's fun.
Yeah.
And if they come out decently, I get them blown up.
Yeah.
I got more of them at home.
Yeah.
I change them around. Yeah. I got to take all those home. I've been here a while.
Got to keep moving.
Yeah.
What sort of equipment do you have? You've got, it isn't just a, you've got a lens.
Nikon.
Yeah.
But I don't, I have a lot of lens that go with it, but I only use one, the 3070 zoom.
Uh-huh.
And that
but
gives you, no. It's a zoom, a 3070 is only about like that.
Oh. I don't know about
hundred. If you get a, from 70, you can get a 70 to 135, and that's about like that. If you want to go big, you know, if you want to go out there, telephoto 200 or 300.
Yeah.
So that's a long one. I have a long, but I never use it. It's no use. I don't really have any use for it. It's hard to lug around.
Yeah, you get.
And I've taken it on trips, and then I've never used it. It's kind of fun to take out in the mountains, but I'm just not. Well, it's. I don't take many pictures anymore. I usually have a camera in my car, and just if I see something, I take it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a PhD camera, push your dummy. You know about that one.
Well,
they're pretty good. They do anything that I want.
Well, this is that sort. I put it on, I don't try to be fancy.
Put it on automatic?
I put it on the automatic mode.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing I do is adjust the distance. Otherwise, it's automatic. It takes, on the automatic mode, it has all these other modes on it.
Yes.
I just bypass those.
Yeah.
It takes everything. All but your distance. In other words, the light is prefigured, and your shutter speed, all in accordance with the light and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And like what you're talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, right.
But I do have the distance adjuster because on those cameras that are automatic adjustment, they go in kind of pieces, not real. They maybe go in maybe 20 degrees or something like that, in 20s instead of, you can get finer than that.
You know, the thing that always amazed me, and I bet your dad had a camera like this, the cameras that they used to take pictures in the old days, they were just pinhole cameras, apparently, which the distance was indefinite. Or
yeah.
Infinite.
Yeah.
Infinity.
Infinity.
And you could see the cow in the field too. A half mile away, just as easy as you could see the cow here.
Yeah.
Beautiful pictures.
You know, none of those were adjustable. You just snapped them.
Absolutely. What's your dad probably had some.
Well,
like that.
No, my father never had one, but my older brothers did. I'm the youngest of about. I had four brothers.
No girls.
I had four sisters, too.
Yeah. Were you born here?
No, Grand Rapids. And they were all, I was the youngest, and I came along, and I was the big mistake of the family. But my brothers, they had cameras, but they were those old black Kodak things.
Yeah.
Some of them were just boxes. And
look into the glass
and,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if I know one brother had one of these fancy ones, you opened up, and it was on kind of a gadget,
with the
bellows,
the accordion,
deal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those.
Well, that was the epitome, and
the door went down, and then it slid out on the
front. That's right.
Remember those?
Oh yeah.
Well, when did you come here then?
1940.
Okay.
February of 1940.
Just before the war started.
Yeah, by golly, you're going to have an anniversary.
Or is it past?
No. I came on the 12th. Came on the 12th of February in 1940.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it'll be 51 years.
Yes.
51 years.
Which was Lincoln's birthday.
Uh-huh.
And my first day at work, I had off.
You worked at the bank?
I started at the People's Bank.
And Ted Bolt was there then?
Yes.
Was
he was president, CEO, he was the works.
Uh-huh. Now, who had he followed? Who had preceded him?
Well, I really wouldn't know.
Uh-huh.
I'm really not sure who it was. Mm-hmm. John somebody, but I never met him.
Uh-huh.
And Ted had been in the bank quite some time by the time I came, because Ted, my goodness, he was my senior by 1940. At that time I was 29. And so he was my senior by quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I'd say Ted's been gone for 15 years. And 15 years, he was 75, so he would have been 90. And
90?
No, he was 75 when he died.
Okay.
In 1976.
Okay.
So just remember, we were on a trip and heard of it when we were on a trip. I wasn't at the bank at that time, but I remember his passing.
So it would have been, he was 36.
He died in 76. And he was 75 years old when he died.
So he was 34 when you came there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you were 29. And,
well, no, in 70.
In 40.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, in 40.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I was 30. In 1940, I was 29.
Uh-huh. Now, was Ken Shepherds there?
No. No. Ken followed Ted. Uh-huh. I think Shepherds was in there before.
Yes, he was.
Passed away.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But he was known for it.
Uh-huh.
Because they had taken over Spring Lake Landing.
Mm-hmm.
And Ken came in.
That's right. Ken had been the president of that bank over there, hadn't he? Uh-huh. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
The Spring Lake Bank was a separate bank, wasn't it?
Yes. That was Harvey Scoton's father ran.
Oh, that's right.
For years.
Yeah.
Until Frank retired. I don't think he passed away. He just had to go from.
Well, you didn't stay. How did you ever go into banking? Did you graduate in economics or?
No, I never had any. I never had any much formal education. When I was in the bank, I took some courses for 2 years.
Yeah.
But up until that time, I was a product of the Depression. When I graduated from high school, I had to go to work.
Yeah.
I had intended to enroll, as so many kids in Grand Rapids went to junior college. And I was going to enroll in junior college in 1929. But then I thought I would work another year to get some money because I graduated. And
what high school?
Creston High School.
Okay. Yeah.
And I stayed on, and then the Depression came, and the big stock market crash.
Sure.
In the 29th of October.
Yeah, you were caught in the crunch.
Yes,
then, weren't you?
Yeah. And so I didn't, and then things worsened.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I don't know. I've had a few kind of native skills, so I applied at the Consumers Park, and I worked in at Steckley's.
What, clerking?
Yes, in the men's department, because I had graduated in January. At that time, if you had enough credits, you could go out and get a job and graduate with your class in June, and all the ceremony,
sure,
and everything.
Sure.
But, so I went to work there, and then when this hit, I thought, well, I better get where someplace where I that's going to be in business for a long time, because I figured that they're going to need electricity around,
sure,
here more than they are clothing. So so I got a job in the accounting department there, and I worked there for 9 years.
So that got you into the...
Yes, and I took some courses in accounting and that sort of thing, but the accounting was very simple, utilities at that time. But anyway, they had a big order book, and you went by the book, and it was pretty simple, utilities. But then I had an opportunity to go up north in 1936.
With Consumers?
No, with the Northern Power Company. To run their accounting department. It was called an accounting department. What it was just a billing department, and a meter reading, and a few other things that
all
came
combined.
In, all combined. That, and then your billing, of course, and all the bookwork on that, of course, and your cashier's department, your depositing, and all the financial end of it, except the main office was in Jackson, so there was nothing really complicated about it.
Well, now, you're talking about consumers now.
Yeah.
But the Northern would have been...
Northern Lighting, Northern Light was a utility that served Traverse City in that area up there.
City.
Later became consumers.
Yeah. That would have
but
been...
But then an opening at the bank came at the same time, and Margaret was in Grand Haven.
Sure.
And so
she was Slim Dornbos's
brother. Yeah. Yes, so we decided to come down here, and that's how. And then I was there 3 years before this opened up here.
It did.
Bannon Flash Store.
43, that would have been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, this is what it was. It wrapped around the corner then, did it? It was a wooden building. I've seen the pictures of it, but I...
You know, I have pictures of it downstairs in the lower level.
Maybe that's where I've seen them.
It could be.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But it went along the street and down.
Yes,
it
covered exactly. This was the end of their building, the same as this one is, except we added this addition on. But
yeah,
the original building that I built, we tore down the old one, you see, and built it on the same lot, except instead of it was a 90 foot wooden building facing 3rd Street.
Uh-huh.
And we rebuilt a 46-foot building, 46 wide, because the original store was only 24. There were four stores in that old brick house. And the so-called big store that was run by the Vanderbush family occupied the corner, 24 feet, and we had a little stock room. Back of another store there, but we tore the whole thing down and rebuilt a 46 by 90 building.
See,
one story, and then we added added this in 1970.
That's right. It was just one story. I forget that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I remember it, was it the A&P? A food store was right next door here.
Yes, A&P.
A&P.
That.
They had torn apparently a section of the wooden stores down. And
well, what happened? I bought the business from Vanderbush, and then I've forgotten exactly, but a few years later, I bought the building, and then in 1949, or maybe 48, but anyway, in 49, the A&P came to me, and they were located on 2nd Street, lost their lease, I don't know, I forgot some of the details.
That's in behind the Mulders.
Yes, they needed more space, they needed parking and that sort of thing. And, of course, the property I had went beyond the building, and as a matter of fact, I remember the Sherwoods had that little piece of property beyond my wooden building, and it was vacant, and that's what interested the A&P store. And the Sherwoods had offered that to me a few years after I was in business, so, and of course I bought it. And and then it was a vacant piece, so A&P saw that. I never knew they were interested. They came in to see me, and I said, "Well, yes, I am interested in building for you. What, you know, we talked about details and all that sort of thing." So of course they had to go to the bank.
back to your buddies.
Naturally. That's what banks are for.
Yeah, that's right.
you know, you can't pay the depositors unless they have...
You're right.
Yes. Well, anyway,
So
that's how that. So I built that building for them and leased it. And then, of course, the development out on the highway came in. And that's
okay,
when
that's
Jimman's Island was building on.
Yep.
And A&P
that's right.
Wanted, and their lease was up within a year of that time, and they thought that they'd better get close to Myers. It would be better for them than down here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for the manager over there and the, and some of the other people, it was a kind of a doubtful thing to do.
As it turned out.
Because they had a very good business here.
Sure.
And but they moved out, and they were soon moved out up there as well. But I think A&P was slipping all over a little bit at that
time. Right.
So it was just kind of in the air with their situation. They had had some problems on markups, and I think that they were getting very closely scrutinized by the government at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing criminal, but
monopoly type thing.
But and I guess some of that.
I've forgotten what the details. I do remember that.
I have too. But anyway, they moved out, and then I rented it for storage for a few years. But anyway, before when I built that building, the agreement was they'd have parking space, and that's what that's why I had to tear this building down. So I tore it down, and we had this parking space in between the two stores.
And it was a common parking place.
Yeah,
though.
It's still there.
Sure.
It's the same distance. But it was all on an angle, and it went back to the... And then, but you know, back in the 40s, there wasn't that much traffic.
Mm-hmm.
Very few people had two automobiles.
Yeah, that's right.
And a lot of people walked.
Yeah. Sure.
And so there wasn't that kind of demand, but within a few years they wanted more space, and then I was able to buy property behind the store from Mrs. Thompson. She had a home there.
And you took the home down.
And they wanted a smaller home. They were getting older. And I didn't tear it down because they had a lot of space. The home was so situated on a very large lot that I had about 50 feet more of parking that I could give them, plus about considerably more behind the house, because the property lot went back rather far. So, and that satisfied them for a while, and then of course eventually I had to tear that down. And then there was another house next to that, beyond that, that I was able to get later on.
So you had that.
Now I didn't. The strange thing is, and I've thought about this so often, I really wasn't very aggressive to get this property. If people wanted to get rid of property at that time, and they came to you, you know, and I was...
You were a logical buyer.
I was a logical buyer because the pieces were contiguous.
Uh-huh.
And so I guess I was a natural one for them to come to where they wanted to get rid of it. So, and that's how it happened.
Uh-huh.
So.
Now these houses down here, or buildings I should say, the Chronicle and Peter Cole's, they were the original buildings, and they're
still,
they weren't part of your operation.
No.
They were separate.
No, they were separate.
Uh-huh. As I remember, John Van Skillen talked about a filling station on the corner beyond Cole's right there.
Yes, there was one there.
Yeah.
And then when I came there, it was not a filling station anymore, but it was a chap that did outboard motor repairs, it was a repair shop.
Uh-huh.
I was able to buy that building where the Chronicle is. I've forgotten when, but it was in the 60s or 50s or 60s.
It had a pretty good hold on the whole block.
Well, I don't know. It just evolved that way. I didn't have any, I guess I didn't have any
grand plan
for doing this or anything, but it just, by the grace of God, it goes that way.
You've got to be the dean of the retailers in town right now. Henry Kreiman's gone.
Yes.
Well, he's still living, but I mean, he's out of the business.
Yes.
And even if Jack Riker was around, I think you've got him by...
Well, if he was still in business, I think Jack was in... his father was in business when I came.
True.
And
then yes.
Jack started quite soon after that.
Uh-huh.
Jack's pretty young.
Yes, right.
Well, I don't know of any other actors.
No, I don't think so.
Of course, I'm not very active either.
Well, you're doing well.
That's how... And you see, my son is so good to me. He lets me have an office.
This is great, isn't it? Perfect, though.
Yeah. Oh, I really appreciate it, because I like people. I like all the people that I associate with here,
sure,
at the store, some of whom I've known for many, many years now.
Uh-huh.
And it's always... I can't remember the day I didn't want to come to the office or come to work.
That's great.
Yeah, of course, years ago, but didn't come to the office. I came down to the store to work.
You bet. Yeah, you probably didn't have an office.
No, well, I had right out in the selling floor, I had a desk.
Huh.
So that I faced the door, and when they came in, I was up off the desk.
Now, what did Van and Bosch sell? Was it a general type store?
No, it was clothing. Men's clothing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, prior to that, I think there were some other stores. There were four of those, as I said, and there were some other things, but I wasn't around at that time. At the time I came, they had this corner 24 feet, and next door was a hat shop, a women's hat shop.
Mm-hmm.
And beyond that, I think at that time Claude Bertin was in there at the third building, and the fourth one was John Claver's Market.
Okay, I've heard of that, but I
yeah, and across the street, of course, there's none of those buildings are there.
Mm-hmm.
The Tribune was there, but next to that were some houses, and there was a couple of older store buildings down that way. But when Prentice came, I think in when was that? That had to be in the late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Because they started to build over there when I was still in the old store.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the late 40s.
You built, when you say the old store, you built this, the first floor.
I mean the old store, I mean the wooden one.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
When you rebuilt, that had to have been after I arrived in 55.
I built it in 50.
Oh, 50. Okay, then before I got here. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe I'm thinking when you put the other story on. That was it.
That was 70.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I built the first floor with foundations and walls to carry a second story.
Uh-huh. You know, all I can think of is the inner urban that ran by here and made this quite a thoroughfare one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to think that the inner urban played a part in your love affair here in Grand Haven. Did you ever use it in the 20s?
When I lived in Grand Rapids? Huh? Sure I did.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. But, you know, I was... I think the railway went out in about 1900, something like that. 1919, something like that. Or early, at least early 20s.
Yes, right. It would have been, I think it was still going in 27, but struggling. I may have the dates wrong, but you're about right.
Well, I remember, of course, coming down with my parents.
Oh, okay.
On the interurban. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It was a big thrill.
And you'd come right down 3rd Street here. You were heading out to the Oval or out to the beach?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we'd get off at Spring Lake. We had, my parents had some friends. Let's see, Strawberry Point.
Oh, yeah.
A popular place.
Sure.
There was summer cottages at that time. Yeah. I presume at that time, I don't exactly remember, it was a little boy then. I presume they were just for summer use.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, they're winterized. Mm-hmm. In fact, there were very few homes on Spring Lake.
When you stop and think about it, the rapid or the mass transit system that was developed then, how far did your parents live, or did you live as a child from the interurban track? I didn't have to walk very far.
Well, we had to take streetcar downtown.
Oh, okay. But there again, there's the mass transit.
Oh, yes. Well, I lived in the north end of town. Creston High School had streetcar go right by on Plainfield, mm-hmm. and we lived up on the hill, and we had a spur. I called it the Carrier Street Spur that came up and stopped right at Kent Country Club. I lived about,
oh, sure.
I lived about two blocks from Kent Country Club. And that's where the carrier line ended. And that was only, actually it was only a block from our house. Mm-hmm. So that's what we rode to get downtown.
So you could walk a block,
mm-hmm.
and with your suitcases, and go all the way to Chicago if you cared
to. Sure,
sure. Yeah. It's pretty amazing when you stop and think about it.
Well, transportation was, after all, when I was a boy, my brothers had a car, but my parents never had a car.
Uh-huh.
And transportation was exceedingly important.
Yeah.
You didn't have a streetcar. You were lost. You just walked. And when we were kids, lots of times we'd saunter along and walk downtown from the north end of town. That was a great adventure.
And that's, well, what a mile.
I'm talking,
yeah.
And you know, I'm going to be 80 in a couple of months, so yeah. I'm talking 70 years ago.
Yeah, sure, as youngsters.
Yeah, sure.
We had some great sliding hills around there.
Yeah, indeed we did.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Kent Country Club, we had the sixth and seventh holes were great. You know, we had.
And they let you go on it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. The pond was there. We used to go down the sixth off the sixth tee, and it was a big jump off that. There was a hill behind it, and it flattened out, and the tee was here. Then it went way down to the pond, and it's still there. It's exactly as it was. And I play that course once a year with the Will Green seniors.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, I'm reminded of my childhood every time I play there. But that hasn't changed. They haven't changed that one bit.
Was that a skating pond as well?
And well, they didn't make it as such. Uh-huh. It froze over, but they didn't use it as such.
Yeah. Yeah.
Skating in those days was flooded like most. Mm-hmm. They flooded parks in Grand Rapids and that sort of thing. There was one in Creston, Creston Pond, we called it. That froze over and we used it for skating. Mm-hmm. But we didn't always have the best of skating there. I think it was sort of spring-fed and the ice, they watched it very closely.
Sure, yeah. Spring-fed, then that would tend to deteriorate the ice.
Oh, that's true.
Well, when you came here as a youngster, you were what, 10 years old or 12 years old? Or
younger than that. I was maybe, of course the interurban didn't run very many years.
It didn't.
No.
Came here in 1903, got over here.
Okay.
Maybe 20 years.
20 years, I think, something like that. Well, we rode the interurban as far back as I can remember. And mm-hmm. I can remember coming down there, and I was 4 or 5 years old
mm-hmm.
with my parents. Mm-hmm. And we'd even take the interurban and go fishing with my father on the pier.
Huh.
It was an old pier then.
Yeah.
You know,
right out here, this pier.
Yes, an old rickety bridge coming across the river. Something else.
Yeah, that thing lasted, 22 is when the old swing bridge went in, and then 59 is when the present bridge went in. I'll bet you knew, or at least your dad knew, what the schedule was of that interurban.
Oh.
People had to be
sure.
very aware.
Oh, sure.
You miss the interurban, you
They never took it in the winter. The travel was a little uncertain in the winter time because of snow and that sort of thing. We had to keep that third rail clear.
That's right. Yeah, it all was that. Yeah. Third rail, wasn't it?
But in the summer, it's very popular.
Now, do you ever remember anyone being hurt on the third rail? I remember as kids, we talked about the third rail. You go near that, and you were dead.
No, I can't say that I ever remember anybody.
But it was open?
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't be allowed today.
No, I'm sure it wouldn't.
Yeah.
Too many irresponsible people. Just very, very responsible.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just think of that, though. That was a hot rail.
Yeah, and I guess it was possibly electrocuted.
I suspect it was. It was direct current, but even then, it didn't make any difference.
I don't know how many. What
the voltage was, or anything like that.
The voltage was.
Yes. I guess you had to. Just standing on the ground to ground yourself. That's all it would take.
I suppose. Jump on it, it wouldn't do anything.
That's
ground
right.
It. Yeah. Ground yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't even remember it being cautioned about it.
Yeah.
Because I think through town it was overhead. You know?
Yes, right. Well, when you started the store here came here in 43,
mm-hmm.
store had been started before that. How many clothing stores were there? Oh. Now you mentioned Reichert, I think.
Well, yes, and there was the Keith Brothers.
Yes, okay.
And there was Bill Meaning. And there was another clothing store, Lawton's, I think it was. Lawson's.
Hmm.
Okay.
On Washington.
On Washington Street, next to Henry Klayman's, I think it was. Losses. Well, I think that was for a while. I think after I started, there was also one. Trying to think, Van Dyke, the young chap that started it was Van Dyke, and that was just west of at that time Mulder's drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
That wasn't in there for very long. But Meanings was there, and he'd been there long.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how long, but he was well established, I guess, down here.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Rikers.
Yes.
I'm not sure that Rikers were in the clothing business in 43. I don't know. I think they were. I think they were.
Stationery business is where he got his start, though, isn't it?
Yes, and of course, he was famous for his gift shop.
Oh, gifts, okay.
And then there was the Abigail, the women's clothing.
Yeah.
And the Style Shop. And then, of course, there was Addison's. Now, Addison's had some menswear in there, too, like department store type. And then down the 11th block was... And then went right. I think Keith's. I'm a little bit vague on this.
I think they were on this side of the street. On the
well, yes, but I think they moved over there because they lost their lease, or they had to get out, and John was going to take that over, Reichert's.
Oh, okay. So it would have been
I think Reichert's going into business precipitated Keith's moving across the street.
Okay,
as I recall. I'm a little bit vague on my dates here.
What Keith was that? Not Bud.
But his father was Bud. Also
okay.
Yes.
All right. All right.
And his brother. His name was Fess. F-E-S. That was a nickname. Maybe.
Fess Keith.
Yes. Fess Keith.
Uh-huh.
You maybe heard that. You read that in your history book.
I don't know.
They were brothers. Now the Enterprise Company, they weren't in business at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And
how about 7th Street?
Well, let's see, 7th Street. Did they have a clothing store up there? I don't recall. But that time there was a shoe store there.
Uh-huh.
And,
You were...
I'm trying to place a clothing store up there, but I don't think there was.
Really, this was off the beaten path. When the Inner Urban came by here, this was just an extension of the main street, really.
Right.
It turned right up there, and...
I'm not even sure where the Inner Urban went anymore.
It went right down. Yeah, I can't... I don't know where... I've seen maps of it.
But I'm sure it came across the river where the bridges are, and then came down alongside the channel.
Yeah.
And then Third Street. Mm-hmm.
That made this a rather main street here.
Yes, as I say, there were buildings across the street. Mm-hmm. There was buildings over there next to the library.
That's right, the library was there.
Yes, and of course Thielman's was here. Uh-huh. And the gas station was here at that time.
Mm-hmm. The Standard.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, that is gone now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you walk by it so many times that I've forgotten it's gone?
Yeah.
Well, you weren't selling spats when you got started, but styles have sure changed.
Well, listen, we were selling collar buttons and separate collars.
Is that right?
Sure, we had a stock of Van Heusen collars.
Yeah.
So, of course, sports shirts were just coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Knit shirts, we called them polo shirts.
Yep.
They were coming in. They came in the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Could be early 30s, when we were still playing golf and knickers.
Uh-huh. Oh, is that right?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's very popular.
Well, you got your taste for clothing when you were working at Steckity's, I suspect.
Well, perhaps I always enjoyed clothing.
Uh-huh.
And so it was a natural thing for me.
Sure.
And when this became available, I was immediately enthused about it. And I didn't know much about it, but I worked for a year at Steckity's Men's. That's not much of a contribution to skill, I guess.
Yeah,
that
sure.
That time, so you
not from buying.
Well, I guess you naturally had good color sense.
Yeah.
That's really what it takes. But really what it takes is to enjoy people.
Yeah, personality.
And I always enjoyed people. It was a real challenge to me. I enjoyed every bit of it. I learned a lot. A lot of people have taught me things. I remember the inventory in 1943 is very low. We hadn't recovered from the Depression yet, really.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, the war, of course, had started. And all the manufacturing was going into war material, including clothing.
Sure.
And there was a great scarcity. And fortunately, I always said that war is a bad thing, and I'm a peace-loving person, but those circumstances were fortunate because I went out and I searched for goods. I went to Chicago. I went to wholesale markets in Chicago, St. Louis, Nashville, Cincinnati, and just to get goods because it was so scarce. And the people from whom I purchased that were older and didn't have that energy to do that sort of thing. And I was young and could so I learned so much.
And you had a ready market here, I bet.
Yes, because the reputation of the store was there. And I was just trying to find goods to serve the customers.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody was having a problem. And I spent a lot of time on your wife brought up our kids when I first went into business because I was on the road an awful lot.
Huh.
And I had people like Dick Boone that was
Oh, sure.
And when I was gone so much, he was running the business, and he meant a lot to me. I was very grateful for his being able to help me.
This would be Moon's dad.
Father, yes. Mm-hmm. He worked for me until he retired. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get out because he knew everybody in town, and he was a very personable fellow.
Yep.
And extremely reliable. And so I was very fortunate in that respect to have somebody that, while I was gone, and I was gone a lot, just trying to get merchandise.
Yeah, something new.
Yeah. Used to get on the train here and go to Chicago and work the Franklin Street wholesale market. Mm-hmm. And I'd go to the merchandise mart, and I got to know a lot of people there who really helped me with the retail business. They were fine gentlemen, wonderful representatives of clothing companies. Mm-hmm. And I owed them a lot as well. But then I'd get on the train and go to St. Louis, overnight to St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And there was a big wholesale market in St. Louis. You know, back in those days, there were many, many items that you could not buy direct from a factory. They were wholesale. Wholesaling was a big business back in the, well, up until the 60s, it was very big. Mm-hmm. So there were a lot of wholesalers in Chicago. And from St. Louis, I used to go to Nashville, Sleeker, and go to Nashville. And there was another big wholesale market. A lot of cotton goods made there, a lot of work clothes, a lot of underwear, and all that sort of thing. And you see, all those things were through wholesalers. And then Cincinnati had a fairly big market, but I didn't spend too much time there. But those three, Chicago, St. Louis, and Nashville. And then, of course, I'd go to New York once a month.
Once a month?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it was hard to get a first class.